How many of you know what kudzu is? Have you ever been over in Alabama? Well, in your bulletin, there is a picture of kudzu. And kudzu was meant to be a good thing. And it was actually encouraged and planted to be a good thing. How many of you know what an oak tree is? All right, let me start with something simple. How many of you are here? Okay. Oak trees are always beautiful. They're tall. They provide shade, places for birds to nest. They provide material for building. Oak trees have always been a symbol of strength. They withstand a lot of storms. When we think of oak trees, we think of stability. Always solid as an oak, that sort of thing. Kudzu is not that. In your bulletin, there is a picture of kudzu. It's a vine. And kudzu will completely cover an oak tree and choke it to death. Kudzu has no, it's fibrous, like a vine. Doesn't have any redeeming social value. Not good for anything. Can't eat it. It's very fibrous, like spinach, and only worse. It was introduced from Asia to the United States in 1876 at the Centennial Exposition in Philadelphia. Right there is the problem. You figure that out. All right. And the reason we're having problems with it today is a governmental mistake, literally. They thought it would be good ground cover, but they didn't do their homework. Now, does that sound like the government? No. They didn't check it out, didn't find out what it would do and what it had done. And so they took it to the Deep South, took it to Alabama, took it to Georgia, and the idea was that it would provide ground cover in that old red clay in which nothing would grow, and for the railroads in the right-of-ways, it would be a good thing. If it had been controllable in those areas, it would have been great. Problem is, what folks didn't realize, it would grow 60 feet, or roughly 1 foot, per day, 60 feet per season. It has covered 7.5 million acres since it was first introduced, which is the size of Rhode Island, Delaware, Massachusetts, together. Since it was introduced as one plant. That's how often, how big, and how much it spreads. It's like a fast-growing cancer, literally. And it will choke, as you can see in that photograph in your bulletin, it'll choke anything in its way. It will cover your car if you leave your car where it is. It will grow and spread across concrete. Doesn't even slow it down. Kudzu is a less than valuable plant. And it degrades faster than the choked plant. And in doing so, it releases excess carbon into the air, and it literally smothers its host. That's how kudzu works. It's a metaphor. I'm using a metaphor today for Nebuchadnezzar, who was like an oak. He was the longest reigning monarch that they had in Assyria. He was the most powerful monarch of his era. He weathered a lot of storms. He learned a lot of lessons. We read about them in that fourth chapter when Barry was reading for us. He built Nineveh, built a solid city for his capital. He learned that God was the ultimate source of his strength and power. And as oaks draw strength and nutrients from the soil, become stable and strong, Nebuchadnezzar learned that he drew his strength from God himself, became stable and strong. The king that followed him was Belshazzar. Belshazzar was a grandchild. Now there are two characters that come up in Belshazzar's reign, and they're confusing. One is a name that was given to Daniel, and it's Belteshazzar. There's a T-E in it. Belteshazzar. Belshazzar is the king. Belteshazzar is Daniel, the prophet. Belteshazzar has something to say to Belshazzar. But Belshazzar is the king. He's a grandchild of Nebuchadnezzar. How often do we see that grandchildren and children oftentimes squander the estate, the business, what has been put aside and worked hard for by parents and grandparents? Belshazzar did nothing of significance. He didn't amount to a hill of beans. He was kudzu. The oak tree was in Nebuchadnezzar, and kudzu just came and lived off of it and spread all over everywhere. He lived off of Nebuchadnezzar's reputation. He had four major problems in his reign, if you will. In Daniel 5, we read these words, "Your Majesty, the Most High God gave sovereign greatness, glory, and majesty to your predecessor." This is being said to Belshazzar. God gave glory to your predecessor, Nebuchadnezzar. Because of the greatness he gave him, all peoples, nations, languages were terrified and fearful of him. He killed anyone he wanted, kept alive who he wanted, exalted who he wanted, humbled who he wanted. But when his heart was exalted and his spirit became arrogant, he was deposed from his throne and his glory was taken from him. He was driven away from his people. His mind became like an animal. He lived with wild donkeys. He fed grass like cattle. His body was drenched with dew from the sky until he acknowledged the Most High God as ruler over the kingdom of men and sets up anyone he wants over it. But you as his successor, Belshazzar, you've not humbled your heart. You didn't learn, even though you knew all of this happened. Instead, you've exalted yourself against the Lord of heaven. In fact, the very vessels from his house were brought to you. And as you and your nobles and wives and concubines drank wine from them, you praised the gods made of silver, gold, bronze, iron, wood, and stone. They don't see or hear or understand, but you did not give glory to the God who holds your life breath in his hand, who controls the whole course of your life. Those are pretty strong words. Daniel didn't mince words. He was pretty direct. He got right in Belshazzar's face and said, "Listen, Nebuchadnezzar had his problems, but he learned that God was his source. You watched all of that happen, and you didn't learn anything. And you think you can do all of that and more. And God holds literally the breath of your life in his hands." Belshazzar forgot his past. He forgot. He lost that sense of remembrance. We've been talking about remember all during the month of May. Things that we need to remember. We did a little word study the first week. We had Mother's Day to remember our moms and all the blessings that they've brought to our lives in the second week. Last week, we talked about remembering our responsibility to reach out with the gospel and share it around the world. That's not a suggestion from God. It's a commandment that we do those things. Well, Belshazzar forgot the valuable lessons of his past. He had no respect for prior experience. In fact, when he was having a drunken party, he sent some of his emissaries to go to the temple and get the gold silverware and the gold goblets and the plates and bring them to his drunken party, and they used them for dinner. There was no respect for the holy vessels of God. Belshazzar was boasting about himself. Nebuchadnezzar had done that early on. If you read chapter 4, which is Nebuchadnezzar, chapter 5 is Belshazzar. But in chapter 4, Nebuchadnezzar said, "Is not Babylon the great that I have built by my vast power to be a royal residence and to display my majestic glory?" And at the answer to that rhetorical question that he asked in that fourth chapter, God said, in essence, "I don't think so." And when God says, "I don't think so," it doesn't matter what you think. It doesn't matter how great you think you are. When God says, "I don't think so," verse 37 of chapter 4 said, "Don't ever forget, he is able to humble those who walk in pride." And there's a principle there. Don't ever forget, he is able to humble those who walk in pride. That's a universal principle. God despises pride. It always leads to a fall. And it always brings one down. I'll tell you how to humble your own pride. At the beginning, remember where you came from. Remember where it started. Remember the sacrifices that were made to get you where you are. You didn't get here on your own. You got here because somebody, mom, dad, aunts, uncles, friends, instructors, people, pastors, prayed for you, helped you, encouraged you, led you, paid your way sometimes, did what was necessary to get you to the chair you're sitting in today. You're not here on your own. God has brought you through using other people. And sometimes the loss of that remembrance, that's what had happened with Belshazzar. Second thing he'd done is he'd lost touch with reality. He really did. While they were having this drunken orgy on the inside of the palace, the Medes and the Persians had their armies. They had laid siege to the city. They were surrounding the walls of the city completely. And he's partying. Chapter 5, verse 1. King Belshazzar held a great feast for 1,000 of his nobles and drank wine in their presence. And those armies were surrounding the city. He considered his city invincible. It had a history of dominance because of Nebuchadnezzar. It had strong walls because of Nebuchadnezzar. It was some 60 miles in circumference. It had high and thick walls he thought impossible to penetrate. They had laid in a 20-year supply of rations so that when someone laid siege, they'd be able to survive on the inside for 20 years. The enemy was completely surrounding the city, but Belshazzar ignored them and threw a party. He was drunk, too drunk on his own success. He lost touch with reality. An ignored enemy is a dangerous thing. And his enemy was surrounding the city. He was too blind, too drunk on his own success to realize that the end was in sight. Listen, strength is never outside. Strength is inside, always. The character of the leadership will show. Babylon fell because it had become so corrupt on the inside that it could not stand. That's reality. There was no sense in Belshazzar's reign of remembrance or the reality of the situation and the desperateness of it. He lost all sense of restraint. Under the influence of wine, he gave orders to bring in the gold and silver vessels that Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the temple in Jerusalem, so that the king, his nobles, wives, and concubines could drink from them. So they brought the gold vessels that had been taken from the temple, the house of God in Jerusalem, and they drank from them. They drank the wine. They praised the gods made of gold, silver, bronze, iron, wood, and stone. The holy vessels from the temple were used for partying. And the concubines that were there, that's another word for sex slave. That's what that is. The perversions that are going on in our society today were going on in that society then. All absolutes had been abandoned. Nothing was sacred anymore. Have you ever been, don't raise a hand, this is rhetorical. Have you ever been around a stupid drunk? Have you ever been stupid? Never mind. You know that when somebody gets so drunk, they're stupid. That the decisions and the restraint all are laid aside. There is nothing sacred anymore. What comes out of their mouth, their activities, their actions, their decisions, you shake your head. Because you know that if they were sober, those behaviors would not be there. But it's possible to become drunk on your own success. And that's exactly where Belshazzar was. It was party time in Babylon. And they were doing it at all costs. He'd lost all sense of respect, all sense of restraint, all sense of reality, all sense of remembrance. It was a time when it was just stupid drunk on their own success. And I would remind you one thing in this story. God's not asleep. He's not on vacation. He hasn't abandoned them. What happens next? There's a very key word. It shows up in the fifth verse. The word is translated like this. At that moment. There's another translation of the word, and it's suddenly. Suddenly. When something happens suddenly. When something happens at that moment. It is not something that there's a ramp up to it. It's something that is precise, immediate, and dramatic. It happens now. At that moment, the fingers of a man's hand appeared and began writing on the wall next to the lampstand. As the king watched the hand that was writing, his face turned pale. His thoughts so terrified him that his hip joints shook and his knees knocked together. You've heard about being so frightened that your knees knock? That's what's described right there. The king called out to the mediums, to the Chaldeans, to his astrologers, and he said to these wise men of Babylon, his buddies, whoever reads this inscription, gives me its interpretation, will be clothed in purple, have a gold chain around his neck, and have the third highest position in the kingdom. So all of the king's wise men, all of his buddies, all of the guys that were supposed to know these things came in, but none could read the inscription. None could interpret and make it known to him. So the king became even more terrified, and his face turned pale, and his nobles were bewildered. Can I give you Miller's translation of that? He sobered up. I'll probably do it anyway. She is so much like her grandfather. Miller's translation of that verse is simply this. Belshazzar sobered up. And he sobered up quick, and so did his party. Pale face, knocking knees, shaking in fear, all the shouting and drinking and sex came to a screeching halt, stopped, and it was silent now. No solution offered for that writing that's on the wall, and suddenly a man of God was sought. It's amazing how many times people don't want anything to do with me when they're healthy and they've got the drinking parties going on. And they've got all their buddies and all the debauchery is happening. I'm not welcome. But just let there be a crisis. And the first person they come looking for is the pastor. First person they come looking for is a man of God. Once they sober up, they want to try and find somebody that's got some answers. Because all at once, they're afraid. So Daniel was brought before the king, and in true preacher fashion, he had a three-point sermon. Love it. The first thing he did was remind Belshazzar that Nebuchadnezzar's power came from God. Verses 18 and 19, Your Majesty, the Most High God gave sovereignty, greatness, glory, majesty to your predecessor. Because of the greatness he gave him, all the peoples, nations, and languages were terrified and fearful. He killed who he wanted, kept alive who he wanted, exalted who he wanted, humbled who he wanted. But don't forget, he got his power from Almighty God. That's first. Power came there. He reminded Belshazzar that Nebuchadnezzar lost his kingdom because of his pride. Nebuchadnezzar, just like you, Belshazzar, Nebuchadnezzar got proud of himself. He thought he did it. He thought all of his possessions he'd earned, all of his kingdoms belonged to him. But when his heart was exalted and his spirit became arrogant, he was deposed from his throne and his glory was taken from him. God wasn't asleep. God wasn't on vacation. He hadn't checked out. And Daniel says to Belshazzar, don't forget, Nebuchadnezzar lost the kingdom. And he was punished. It wasn't enough to just take his kingdom away from him. He was driven away from his people. His mind became like an animal. He lived with wild donkeys. He was fed. That means he was in the House of Representatives. That'll sink in right after lunch. He was fed like grass, like cattle, and his body was drenched with dew from the sky until, key word, until he acknowledged that the Most High God is the ruler over the kingdom of men and sets anyone he wants over it. You know I make political jokes all the time. I make them. I make them because they're funny. Because if I didn't make fun of our government, I would cry. And it's not one side or the other. Pick a side. It matters not. It's funny. It's disastrous. It's absurd. Can you believe we're sitting here today and babies are in danger? Can you believe that in your lifetime? If you don't laugh, you'll cry. God sets up the leadership and he takes it down. He's in charge. Belshazzar was reminded by Daniel, don't become proud and think you got here on your own, pal, because you didn't. And then the last thing, he summed it up with the conclusion. Belshazzar, you're his successor. You have not humbled your heart, even though you know everything that happened to Nebuchadnezzar. You chose to lose sense of remembrance. You've chosen to lose touch with reality. You've chosen to cast off restraint. You've chosen to lose your respect. You can expect God's response. The wall, writing on the wall says, you've been measured. You've been weighed, and you're coming up short. Miller's translation, you think you're a heavyweight. You're a lightweight. You can't even begin to stand on God's scale. You will be separated from your kingdom. You will be separated from all you possess. And the fifth chapter of Daniel concludes with these words. That very night, Belshazzar was killed. Listen, it is not a funny thing. It is not a cute thing. It is not a smart thing to mess with the judgment of God. When he speaks, it's over. That same night. God's patience is long, but his judgment is swift. When God finally says, I've had enough, it's enough. The Medes and the Persians surrounding the city, they thought couldn't come through. All they did was divert the Euphrates River out into a swampland. When they did that, the riverbed became dry. They came under the wall where the river that they thought was going to supply them for 20 years, they used that riverbed to come into the city, and that's how they destroyed a city that was indestructible and invincible. Came right through the very water supply source that they thought would supply them. When God speaks, judgment comes. I want to tell you something as we stand in this memorial weekend. These United States have lost our sense of remembrance completely. We're told now that we're no longer a Christian nation. And if you look around, that's not a wrong statement. Now we're being told we were never founded on Christian principles. Sorry, when I read the history books, I can remember what I learned and what I've read. We're told that there's no place for the Bible, no place for the biblical principles in our culture, and we see what's happening to our culture. America used to honor God unashamedly and openly. It's inscribed in our monuments all over Washington. It's printed on our currency. We credited God with our blessing, for his blessing and our successes. We turn to him in our trials and in our losses. Woodrow Wilson said these words, a nation that does not remember what it was yesterday does not know what it is today or what it is trying to do. We are about a futile thing if we don't know where we came from or what we have been about. Those are wise words. Our nation was very definitely founded upon the principles of God. Canada was settled by men who were looking for gold. Mexico was settled by men who were looking for gold. The United States was settled by men who were looking for God. And that made all the difference in the world. Don't ever forget where we came from. We've fallen a long way when the manger is no longer welcome on Main Street. We've fallen a long way when the Ten Commandments are removed from the marketplace. We've lost our remembrance of our roots. We've lost touch with reality when we believe that that mighty oak that has been the source of strength to the whole world for generations has to be brought down. I will say one thing for President Obama, whether you liked him or whether you didn't, he was true to his word. He said before he was elected, I'm going to bring fundamental change to this nation. And he did. That man was true to what he wanted to do. I don't care whether you like it, whether you don't like it. I respect the fact he was committed to it and he did it. I will respect what he did. God and government for people today have become synonymous. And they are not. Never have been. Never will be, but to our culture today, we've lost touch with reality, and we think that the government is our God. We've lost our restraint. Babylonians didn't see a parallel between moral decay and national decline. Well, neither do we. And the moral decay and the sexual permissiveness in Babylon is child's play compared to what it is in our nation today. Perversion and abuse of our children, people beyond description. Children are confused on their identity because their role models have been confused about their own identity. And if we're confused, how do we expect our kids not to be? We've lost our restraints. Discipline has been replaced with the word rights. And what we forget is that rights come with responsibilities. We don't talk about those. We've lost respect for any and all authority. We've lost respect for people who have paid the price for us to not have any respect. We've lost respect for truth. Our problems are not primarily political. Our problems are not primarily economic or social. Our problems are spiritual, and everything else is merely symptomatic. God's judgment is as certain, mene, mene, tekel, upharsin. It's as certain today as it was for Belshazzar. God's going to call numbers. How close are we to our number being called? Who knows? Who knows how close we might be to facing God's judgment? I don't know. But I know the Bible says God will not be mocked. What is sown will be reaped. You plant corn, you reap corn. You sow to the wind, you reap a whirlwind. That's principle of Scripture. It has never changed. God is not asleep. Very few nations have a history like America. For over 200 years, our nation has been a launching pad for the gospel to the very ends of the earth. And now we are a mission field for sure. We've been the mighty oak, but we're being choked out by kudzu. We're being choked out by lack of morality, lack of restraint, lack of memory, lack of anything and everything that's of any value. We often hear people say God is our only hope. I want to say something to you that might be a little bit of a shock today. I'm concerned that God may be the United States' biggest threat. Why should America be exempt from judgment? There's a last night for every nation. There's a last night for every individual. Our days are numbered, and God knows them. We need a sense of urgency again within the church to cause people to exchange their self-righteousness for Christ's righteousness and God's righteousness. Today, we remember those who gave much or gave all for the freedoms we enjoy today, but never forget the words of Nebuchadnezzar: the Most High still rules over the affairs of men. It's in God's hand. He is sovereign. When he says enough, it's enough. I'll challenge you. If we don't humble ourselves before God, the kudzu is going to kill the mighty oak. It'll choke it out. I just pray that God will have mercy on each of us and upon these United States. And my prayer from my soul is that God will bless these United States one more time. Bow your heads with me in prayer, would you please? Lord, on this Memorial Day, I've tried to draw a parallel between a king who knew you, forgot about you, was judged by you, learned his lesson, and was restored to power. Tried to draw a parallel with that's what our nation should look like. And I tried to draw a parallel for what we have become. We've lost our history, our roots. We've lost, Lord, our reality. We've lost our touch with respect. And we're just anarchists. How long are you going to put up with it, Lord? I don't know. But here's what I do know. I know that we can individually humble ourselves before your throne and ask forgiveness for our own pride and for those things that we think we've done on our own and bring you back to the forefront. And as we do that as individuals, that will affect it, in essence, for us as a nation. Lord, you've blessed America. And on this Memorial Day, we thank you for the people who gave all they had, their very lives, bled out for the freedoms we enjoy. Lord, forgive us, please, please, for the culture we've created and that we tolerate today. Stand with me, would you please? I don't expect any of us to be able to change the culture dramatically tomorrow. I do expect that if each one of us will change the culture within our own soul, within us individually, and remember who our source is, and remember that he sets up the governments and he tears them down, and he puts people in power and he takes people out. It takes all the stress out of November elections. And it doesn't matter whether a Democrat is elected or whether a Republican is elected or some independent is elected. Nobody gets there without passing by the throne. That's the ultimate. And understanding that my job is to be humble before God and to seek God. How do I serve you and reflect you in my community and in my culture? That's our call. That's it. And we will do that faithfully. I pray you'll enjoy your Memorial Day tremendously.